The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Big Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I am Will Brinson. I'm the host of this show. We have 8 episodes a week. If you're just tuning in for the Monday night preview, we will break down the Jets-Patriots game in New York, MetLife Stadium. Pats are favored. That may surprise you. With Jared Dubin, then Jason Lockenfora will join us after the break to explain why he has a picture of himself in a Misfits t-shirt with Joe Biden on social media. His dog will bark several times, just FYI. And we will talk about Cam Newton, Patrick Mahomes with him, and Kirk Cousins. We will talk instead, no Kirk Cousins, we will talk. Make sure to check out our Week 7 Sunday Recap podcast. Myself, John Breach, Ryan Wilson, and Sean Wagner-McGuff break down all the games from Sunday. We have an early odds YouTube exclusive that is up on youtube.com/CBS Sports. Click on, go there, hit subscribe if you want, hit the video section up at the top, and then you'll see a bunch of little like green background things. Those are our Pick Six podcast videos. If you watch them, it would be greatly appreciated, because when we get a lot of views on those, people are like, oh, the Pick Six podcast is so popular, so cool. So go watch those. You can also download, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. Joining us now, Jared Dubin. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. I feel like I have to say, just because I grew up there, this game tonight, it's in New Jersey, not New York.
Oh, did I say New York?
You did.
I said New York, yeah. It's at the Jets, but it is in New Jersey.
Yeah.
I don't really get the whole tri-state area and how that whole thing works.
New Jersey is a suburb of Manhattan.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And then like the very bottom part of New Jersey, like Cherry Hill and Atlantic City, is a suburb of Philly.
I gotta say, I was up in Stamford, Connecticut 2 weeks ago and I kinda liked it.
That's a suburb of New York as well.
It sure is, because it's flew into LaGuardia. It's a 45-minute cab ride or an Uber ride from LaGuardia.
Never go to LaGuardia again. It's the worst place on the planet, probably.
It is absolutely. And you know what the worst thing was? And I don't want to veer away from our preview of the Monday night game, but since we are talking about the Northeast, I had like, for whatever reason, my ticket got a little askew. My TSA pre did not get assigned to my ticket. That's fine. No big deal. I can go, I'm a blue collar guy. I can go through regular security with everybody else, except on the way back home, it meant, going through LaGuardia, security with my shoes off and I forgot to wear socks.
That's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. I was like sitting there like, oh my God, my feet are being eaten alive by like slime or whatever it was. And by the way,
they should sell socks somewhere in the airport so that doesn't have to happen.
As soon as you get through too, you see there's like a hot bar. It's like, who's eating that hot bar? Like, what do you mean you're going to scoop up some like, or it's anyway, we don't need to talk about LaGuardia. Let's talk about the Patriots and the Jets. Does this feel like, with the return of Sam Darnold, that the Jets have a chance?
I came into writing my preview piece on this game thinking that the Jets were probably going to keep it close because of how good the offense looked last week. And just through the writing of it and watching more of the Patriots defense to confirm that some of the numbers I found were actually real, it convinced me more and more that it's not going to be that close. The Patriots defense is just way too good, and I just can't see really anyone other than the best offenses in the league moving the ball against them at all. And I don't think, I think the Jets will very obviously be better in this game than they were in the first game when Luke Falk was playing quarterback and was 12 of 22 for 98 yards and a pick. But I don't think that they have enough to really move the ball consistently against the Patriots defense, you basically need to break a big play to score on them, and they don't give up big plays.
They sure don't. They sit back and they smother your receivers, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to read you some numbers right now from the Patriots secondary. I swear they're all real numbers. Like, none of this is made up, okay? Right. So there are 94 cornerbacks who have played at least 100 snaps in coverage this season, according to Pro Football Focus. Four of them are on the Patriots, okay?
Okay.
J.C. Jackson ranks first in passer rating allowed, 15.8 passer rating on throws in his direction. Stephon Gilmore ranks fifth, 48.3. Jason McCourty ranks ninth, 54 passer rating on throws in his direction. The worst cornerback on the team so far has been Jonathan Jones, 84.5 passer rating, 32nd in the league.
Cow.
By the way, he's averaging, like, allowing 2.8 completions for 33 yards a game, and he's the worst cornerback on the team so far.
But that's insane.
And, like, here's an even better one. I swear this is real. Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon have been targeted a combined 9 times. Do you want to guess the stats on those 9 throws? This is it's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
0 completions?
They've allowed 4 completions for 21 yards on 9 throws.
Okay.
All 5 other passes have been picked.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
They've intercepted more balls than they've given up in terms of passes. All right, so this is kind of interesting. I'm just curious about your philosophical take on this. It was my mom's birthday this past weekend, and then we visited her, and they had some friends down there. They were doing like a whole thing. And, I was explaining to them, to my dad and one of his very good friends, as we were up drinking some wine, later in the evening, watching some college football, that what Bill Belichick has done and how this is like Bill Belichick's it's his opus, right? Like he was ahead of the curve on analytical production or analytical decision making in terms of building a defense from the back in. Like, he went out and got all these cornerbacks, and as a result, he now has this group that plays in like almost seamless fashion now that they've had 2 or 3 years together, and he finally has the defense that he's always wanted. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, this defense is double. By the way, they lost Justin Coleman, who was like one of the best slot corners in the league, and they just missed absolutely no beats, and their corners are still amazing. Like, the linebackers are playing really well. Jamie Collins is back and is playing like out of his mind. Like, he was terrible for the Browns and then comes back to New England, is making like no money comparatively, and he's just been ridiculous again. Dante Hightower is playing great. I mean, the whole, like, at this point, it's more of a back 7 instead of a front 7. Like, you really should include the linebackers with the defensive backs rather than the guys who play up front, just because of the way things work now. And the whole back 7 is just playing unbelievably well for this team. Like, the only guy you can really throw at is Patrick Chung, and he is basically just sitting in the box, letting running backs catch the ball in front of him and tackling them right away. It's pretty unbelievable what these guys are doing. Nobody's open ever. For some reason, teams are throwing at Stephon Gilmore more than any of the other cornerbacks, and it's not successful at all, but it's even less successful throwing at the other guys. So I don't even know, like, it's incredibly difficult to get anything against them. And I mean, the front is playing really well too. It's not like the defensive front has been bad. I don't know. This is one of the best defenses I've seen in a very long time.
So do you think it is, and we'll get to the Jets offense in a second, but do you think it's a result of what percent of the Patriots' success would you ascribe to them playing the softest schedule we've ever seen out of the gate?
I don't know. 10%, 20%. I mean, how much does the schedule contribute for any team? However much that is, that's how much I would ascribe to the Patriots.
Okay.
I don't think it makes any more difference than it does for anybody else. They're just dominating teams. It's like not even close.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I don't disagree with you. Do you, all right, what do the Jets do then? Because I do think, at least with like Darnold and the check down offense that they like to operate, that they can potentially create some drives here using Le'Veon Bell, using Jamison Crowder, dinking and dunking, maybe take a shot every now and then to Robbie Anderson, like down the field off play action. But like they could sort of creep and crawl their way down the field, right? Maybe?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about this Patriots defense is the dinking and dunking is what you have to do and you can't miss ever.
Right. They force you to be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, if you miss, it's going to be picked or you're going to get sacked or you're going to turn the ball over. I mean, you basically have to make a perfect throw in like the 6-7 yard range and just keep doing that all the way down the field because they don't give up big plays. The only big play they've given up really this year is that, like, what was it? Like the jet sweep to what's his name? Sims or Wims or whoever on Washington. And he broke like 17 tackles all the way down the field. And then I think Golden Tate had like a decently long touchdown toward the end of the game last week. Which is like really the only pass, the only actual
pass. It was a missed tackle too. It was a BS play.
It's really the only like legit passing touchdown that they've let up all season basically. I mean, it's just really tough. You have to be perfect. You can't miss anything. And like, if you run, you better get 5 yards or more on any run. Otherwise you're going to be working way against the sticks and, they're just going to kill you. I mean, it's so tough.
What do the Jets do? Like, do they just try to be perfect and dink and dunk?
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of have to. I don't know. The offensive line has not been very good. Yeah. Some of that is, you know, that Luke Falk was playing a bunch of games and they had, Trevor Siemian before that for whatever it was. Like, I guess he didn't even really play like half the game,
Siemian,
right?
Trevor Siemian played week two against the Browns on Monday night for like a, yeah, he right before half, the first half ended, he basically broke his ankle, I think.
Right. And, some of it is just having a quarterback who's like not a real quarterback working behind the offensive line. Quarterbacks contribute, you know, a very significant part of like pressure rate and sack rate and things like that. But I mean, the Jets rank 31st in opponent's pressure rate, 31st in adjusted sack rate, 32nd in adjusted line yards per carry, all at Football Outsiders. I mean, that's not good, obviously. The Patriots have the sixth highest pressure rate in the league through 6 weeks, second in adjusted sack rate, third in adjusted line yards per carry. So they've been pretty dominant up front. So, I mean, I think if you want to take a deep shot against them, it's going to be very tough just because it's very likely that the Patriots are going to be able to get pressure. I think you could sort of have to dink and dunk your way down the field, have Le'Veon Bell and Jameson Crowder make guys miss. This would be a really good game for them to have Chris Herndon back, just because it would give you another option in short yardage that's so athletic and can make guys miss and like test the defense at least up the seam. Ryan Griffin's really just not going to do that. And, yeah, I think it's going to be really tough, and they basically have to hope Darnold is just 100% on point with every single throw and doesn't make any mistakes, and you're able to create some, you know, 8, 9, 10 play drives getting yourself down the field. And I think it's just really, really tough to do against this Patriots defense.
All right, what happens when the Patriots had the ball? Is this offense really not very good? Is it possible this offense isn't very good?
I think it's possible, but some of it is just they're so injured. You know, David Andrews out for the year, Isaiah Wynn out for the year. Josh Gordon is not going to play in this game with his ankle injury. Matt LaCoste and Ryan Izzo, the tight ends, are both out. Rex Burkhead got downgraded to out again with the foot issue that's been lingering for a few weeks. Julian Edelman's banged up. Philip Dorsett's banged up. Gunnar Olszewski got an injury on Friday's practice. And I mean, it's up in the air whether Dorsett's even going to play. I mean, that's so many guys, that were expected to be contributors on the offense that are hurt. And I think even in previous years when the offense has been good, they do spend the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season figuring out what kind of offense they want to be. They did that last year and the year before even, just figuring out what kind of things are going to work. Basically, the only thing they knew was going to work every year was whatever Tom Brady and Julian Edelman want to do in a quick passing game. You know, some years they had Gronk healthy, some years he wasn't very healthy, and it was, you know, sort of they figured out what kind of offense they were going to be based on whether or not he was healthy and what else they had to do. It seemed like this year they were going to try to be sort of a, you know, pound the ball with Sony Michel type offense, but the offensive line injuries and now two tight end injuries and two fullback injuries, James Devlin and his replacement, Jacob Johnson, are both out, I think, for the year now. Yeah, I mean, it's They're still very much figuring themselves out, but they are the highest scoring offense in the league anyway. Some of that is obviously because they've had, I think, 5 defensive touchdowns. But even without that, I think they're still like the 6th or 7th highest scoring in the offense in the league per game. So, I mean, they've been quite good, even while not looking very good.
Mm. What can the Jets do? Like, how do they match up against this Patriots team? And is there a way to, like, I almost feel like you, I mean, this sounds stupid, but I almost feel like if you're the Jets, you have to figure out a way to keep the Patriots from scoring 21 points. Cause if they score 21 points, this game is probably over.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, the Patriots, I think the most points they've given up in a game is like 14 or 17 or whatever it is. You're probably not scoring very much against them. You absolutely need to hold them down. The Jets defense has been better.
CJ Mosley supposed to play, says to play.
Yeah. He's been out for a while now.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be tasked, I would think, with figuring out how to do something about James White in the short yardage passing game. Obviously, the Patriots tight ends are not really a big part of the offense this year. You don't really want Mosley guarding, you know, whether it's Julian Edelman or Jacoby Myers in the slot. That's not the best thing for him to do. The safeties are playing very well. Jamal Adams looks good. Again, Marcus May, I think, has been better this year. The cornerbacks, though, are just... Man, Tremaine Johnson looks like one of the worst big money signings in recent history. Given up a 111.1 passer rating on throws in his direction. And that's without even really giving up a touchdown yet. He's just, I mean, everything you throw at him is complete. I think whether it's Edelman or Dorsett working on him, the Pats are going to find a way to be successful throwing at him. Darrell Roberts, teams have been successful throwing at him. I mean, they've been best in the slot with Brian Poole, and he's not really that good of a slot corner. There's an improvement on Buster Skrine, who's not good at all. but, I mean, other than that, the outside pass defense is just not very good. And I think if you can throw the ball quickly against them, you can sort of – I mean, I think it's going to be easier for the Patriots to think and dunk their way down the field than it is for the Jets, obviously. But I do think just because of how banged up the Patriots are, this is not going to be a game where they have like a ceiling game and blow the doors off the Jets. Like, who was it a couple weeks ago? Like the Eagles had a big offensive game. I don't think it's going to be that kind of game for the Patriots. I think it's going to be more, they're going to try to get up early and then just be like, all right, Sony Michel, get your 4 yards a carry and try to run the clock out for us.
Okay. So with that in mind, let's talk about some props, and then we'll get to your prediction. And you can read Dude's preview at CBSSports.com, obviously. Over-under Sam Darnold, 222.5 passing yards.
I'm going under. I don't think you can take any quarterback for the over against this Patriots defense. And remember, you know, Darnold looked great last week against the Cowboys defense, which just shut down the Eagles on Sunday night somehow. But in week one against the Bills, who are, you know, a defense either almost as good or just as good or better than the Patriots defense, Darnold looked terrible. I mean, he was 28 of 41 for 175 yards. I mean, it was check down city and they really did nothing.
Yeah. Worth noting, he may have had mono then. So
definitely worth noting.
I don't know. It's fine. Tom Brady, over under 300.5 passing yards.
I think I go under there too. I just don't think that the Pats are going to have one of those monster games. Plus the whole receiving core is banged up right now other than Jacoby Myers. I think it's going to be like, I think this will be a low scoring game where they try to, play ball control, short passes to James White, short passes to Julian Edelman and run up the middle with Sony Michel.
The over-under for Jacoby Myers catches is actually 2.5. I like the over there.
Yeah, I like the over there, too. I think he's a good player.
He is a good player. He should not have gone undrafted, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, and especially with Dorsett in potentially playing banged up and not necessarily all that involved, Myers might be the number 2 or 3 option in the passing game.
Yep.
And I don't think, you know, Olszewski has not shown much, I don't think, in the passing game so far. It's possible they could develop him into something, but I don't think he's shown all that much so far. So I think that Myers is going to have to be pretty heavily involved.
Over under Sony Michel, 63.5 rushing yards.
I'll go over. He's been pretty good the last few weeks that they've tried to get him more involved. I think he's gone over 63 in each of those last three games since.
He's got 63, 91, and 86 the last three games.
Yeah. Since that Jets game where he was, I mean, just atrocious and played the fewest snaps. Yeah, I think it was the fewest snaps of his career in that game and the lowest snap rate. He's been much more involved since then, especially the last 2 weeks. They've gotten him involved in the passing game, especially in the first half, sort of designing a couple of quick screens and swing passes for him. And I think that's loosened things up a little bit more. I'm going to go over there because I think they're going to win and they're going to try to run a lot.
Okay. Over under. Oh, over under Julian Edelman, 74.5 receiving yards.
I'll go over just because I think it's going to be a big quick pass game for them, which means a lot of targets for Edelman. And, I just don't think the Jets secondary is all that good. So even if Brady doesn't throw for, 350 yards or something, I think, it's going to have a nice time completing those passes to Edelman and James White. And those guys usually get, 8, 9, 10 yards per catch. So if he catches 8 passes, I mean, I think he gets over 80 yards or so.
What about the final prediction? Do you want me to take with the over-unders or the line is? You tell me what you got and then I'll take.
Yeah, let me say it first. I got Pat's 24-13.
As always, all over it. That's way under though. Patriots -9 now. It's fallen down. It was 10 at one point, fallen down to 9. Over under 43.5.
Yeah, so I'm further away from the
over under
spread and the over under than usual, but it's, it's pretty close. 2 points away from the spread and, what is that? 4 points, 6 points away from the over under.
Yeah. I mean, that feels like it's a situation where it's 24-13 late. Or like 24-10 late or something like that. And is Sam Darnold going to throw a touchdown? You know what I mean? Like, is he going to throw a garbage time touchdown?
It's got to be like the Patriots scoring 30 or more for this game to go over. I can't see the Jets scoring like 2 or 3 touchdowns.
Hmm. A lot of people are on the Jets tonight.
I know. And I don't really get it.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid to bet against Bill Belichick in primetime. But, there you have it.
Right. I mean, the Jets should be considerably more competitive in this game than they were in the first game when they really should have essentially lost like 35-0. Their two scores in that game were a muffed punt and a pick six by Jarrett Stidham. So that game was like not a real football game.
Mm. All right, Jared Dubin, you're the best. We will talk on Thursday. Vikings-Redskins. Kirk Cousins.
Sounds good, man. Kirk Cousins Bowl.
That's right. That's right. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Lockenfora on all the latest news and notes around the NFL.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back to the program. Now joining us as promised, the NFL misfit himself, Riding with Biden. Jason Lockenbora, what's up, buddy?
You know what? I prefer that term much more than insider. I've always hated that term. Yeah, I still hate it. I cringe every time I hear it or, God forbid, say it. But it is what it is, I guess.
Well, it is your technical title, unfortunately. You are the CBS Sports technical insider. Yeah, like sometimes
Can you just call me a reporter? You know what I mean? Like, whatever. Sorry, dog. Copper's sneezing. See, Copper's allergic to the title, too.
So, look, we're going to dive into some NFL takeaways, including maybe some trades that were made, some trades that were not made. What do you expect?
Trades to be made, absolutely.
Trades to be made, various quarterbacks. But first, I got to ask you, on Sunday night, a photo appeared on social media of you in a Misfits T-shirt on a train mugging for a selfie with former Vice President of the United States of America, Joe Biden.
Yes.
That's a
Doctored.
No, not doctored at all. Like I could tell because it was taken with the BlackBerry. You could tell.
It was taken with my Android. Here's the other part of it. JB took the shot. How about that? JB was the photographer.
Right, JB was on the train with you?
Yeah, he's always on the train with me. He lives in Bethesda. He lives near DC. So sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes I make the 8 o'clock and he doesn't because, like, a game might go overtime even if it's a Fox game. Yeah. And he can't leave until, you know what I mean? All the highlights are wrapped and whatever, whereas we're already off the air, you know what I mean? So I'm out of there, like I'm cleared, but he's not. But usually we both make the 8 o'clock Acela. And I've been on trains before with Biden, and Biden, like I've been riding trains all my life, and Biden, you know, he has too. So, like, you get to know people who work at Amtrak, and everybody's got a Biden story, and it always starts with, he's the greatest guy in the history of the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's so down to earth, yada, yada, yada. I've just always heard. He's like the most down to earth, cool dude. Like no pretense. Like he just rides the train like everybody else. It wasn't like there were marshals everywhere. It wasn't like there was Secret Service everywhere. It just wasn't. So I knew I was going to run into Biden on a train at some point. Like there have been times where I've been on trains, but not in first class, and like you'd hear like, "Hey, Biden's in first class." First class this time, and so was he. Yeah, and you could tell there was a lot of staffers on there, too. So, like, and that train was packed. That train was totally, totally packed. And sitting, there were some of his staffers sitting near me. So I could tell that, you know, they probably worked from, like, you and the campaign, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're talking. And I'm like, you know, you guys, is he getting off at Wilmington or Washington? And they're like, yeah, he's getting off at Wilmington. He's going home. And they're like, we're going down to Washington, you know, to campaign headquarters, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know, I've always heard, like, it's not a, like, you know, he's cool with, like, taking a selfie or a picture or whatever. Like, oh, totally. They're like, yeah, just, you know, like, they're like, wait, you know, like, when it's, like, 10 minutes before Wilmington, just go down there and you know what I mean, tell them we sent you, whatever.
Okay.
So I go down there, and I'm standing there, and I immediately grab JB because I'm like, well, I saw a Misfits Saturday night, so I got a Misfits T-shirt. So, like, I was, you know what I mean? It was hot on the train, so I took my sweatshirt off because it was, like, the train was overpacked and it was crowded. So, whatever. But so I'm like, JB, hey, I'm going to go, you know, ask Mr. Biden for a picture. Do you mind taking it? He's like, of course. So JB was sitting, like, catty corner from him. So I go down there, and I'm kind of looking for a while, and I don't want to interrupt. And he sees me, and he's like, hey there. And I'm like, hey, Mr. Biden, would you mind if I took a picture? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, how do you want to take it? And I'm like, oh, my colleague, Mr. Brown here will take it. And JB stands up. You know what I mean? JB's like 6'4", and he's like, oh, JB. So I was good. So at that point, At that point, I'm golden.
So you're like, my colleague James Brown is going to take it, and JB stands up, and he's like, I mean, like, he obviously, I mean, I'm not suggesting he should.
He knew who JB was. He knew who JB was.
Yeah, I mean, JB's the face.
I don't think he had a damn clue who I was. Not that I would expect him to. You know what I mean? I just want to get a picture. Like, I didn't care one way or the other. I don't think he had any idea who I was. And, like, there was another dude I'd been talking to who came down with me. So then I'm like, and Mr. Biden, you know, could my friend here get one? And so then I took that guy's phone and I took the picture of that guy with Mr. Biden.
It's a great picture. It should be is it your Twitter avatar yet? I assume it is.
No, it's not. I don't know. The one with me and Snoop Dogg, I have a hard time. That one hasn't been knocked out yet, the background. You know what I mean? I think I'm riding that one. I don't even know if I know how to change the background at this point, to be honest, anyway. So I'm probably just rolling with that one forever, I guess.
Yeah,
but the little picture, I've got my kids on there now, the two boys. I don't know.
Yeah, go with the kids.
It's just, I think we're at a point now where, like, it would just be more, like, unfortunately.
It would be more trouble.
Not that I look at the comments because I honestly don't. But it's just, you know what I mean? Like, people perceive it one way or another, and it's like.
It would be viewed as an endorsement, so you should definitely just keep
Snoop. Right.
Yeah.
At this point.
You do endorse for president in 2020, Snoop Dogg. That's who you're voting for.
Yeah. Or president of anything.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to football. Politics-free Biden discussion.
And when I got back to my seat, like, Philadelphia had given up, like, 17 more points in the time it took me to walk to the end of the train and, you know, not even the end of the train, end of the car. But, no, I swear, like, I got back, you know, I got sat back down, put the game back on. I'm like, oh, yeah, this thing's totally over.
Do you think Howie Roseman regrets not trading for Jalen Ramsey today?
Not really. You know, there's a point where you feel like you can only compromise yourself so much, and with what they'd have to pay him on top of what's already going on there, I feel like they went as far as they felt like they could go. You know, there were people in that organization who, when I reported 2 weeks ago that there were two ones on the table, sort of discounted it, and then like 5 days later, one of those people doubled back at me and they're like, you know what, you were right, and I'm like, yeah, and I'm still right, and like that's what it's going to be. But at that point, the Jags felt like the team that they got the picks from was probably going to win the Super Bowl. And so those picks, you know what I mean? They're thinking it could be 32 and 30. And the Rams aren't, you know, like, they're not winning the Super Bowl even with Jalen Ramsey. And in that division, they still, I know everything that happened yesterday. I get it. It's a snapshot. But when you pan out, you know, and look at the whole terrain and what's to come, they still might be the third best team in that division.
Well, and with
so that's why Jacksonville took that offer. I mean, it's like,
yeah. Well, look, with there's two good teams in the NFC South. There's three good teams, maybe four good teams in the NFC North. There's three good teams.
No, there's not.
Okay,
four teams in the NFC North.
Okay, I mean, look, the Bears are 3-3, and they're not very good, but they could still make a playoff run.
No, they can't.
Okay, well, we can get to Trubisky in just a second.
But with who at quarterback?
Well, Andy Dalton.
Nick Foles, Andy Dalton. Who's the quarterback?
Or can they make a trade?
They could, but, I mean, in season and knowing the system, I mean, they're not going to. I mean, it's not very feasible. First of all, Foles can't even come off. He's still at least 2 weeks before he can even come off IR, right?
Yeah.
And all that money, they're not going to do that. They're stuck, man. You can't win in this league without a quarterback. Sorry. The Bears are not good. And the Lions, as much as I like the Lions' fight and spirit, they found ways. And it's not always their fault, but regardless, the L or the T has come in too many instances where it shouldn't have. You know, they should have beat Kansas City. They should have beat Green Bay. They should have beat Arizona. They didn't. And with the way the Vikings are playing and the way the Packers are playing, I think the Lions are now in trouble. And again, I say that as someone who believes in them and thinks they legitimately should be first in that division. The reality is they're not. And Green Bay and the Vikings are formidable, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, Green Bay and Minnesota are playoff teams, right?
I mean,
Minnesota's 5-2. The Vikings, I'm actually currently right now, in the middle of a fight with Pete Prisco, who
you don't say.
I tweeted out that people are like all back on board Kirk Cousins again, right? It's like he wins three straight. He's playing awesome. First quarterback in NFL history with 300 plus passing yards, 130 passer rating or better in three straight games. You know, they light up the Vikings. I mean, they light up the Giants. They light up the Eagles. They light up the Lions. They got the Redskins, Chiefs, Cowboys, and Broncos before their Week 12 bye. They should win all four of those games, and they should go 3-1 at worst, unless Patrick Mahomes magically returns in time for Week 9, which we can get into in a second. The Cowboys game is on prime time, so I'm assuming that people will bash Kirk Cousins if he doesn't win that game.
Yes.
Same thing with the Seahawks game after the bye in Week 13. But by and large, you know, we're at a point where people are backing Kirk Cousins. He leads the NFL in terms of yards per pass attempt. They're using a ton of play action. He's throwing the ball down the field to Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. He looks awesome. I would be really surprised if either of those teams missed the playoffs, right? I mean, and that's
agreed.
So you're looking
at – go look at the Vikings at home, too. Like, good luck winning there even in January. The defense is especially stifling at home. Like, they've got a real home field advantage.
R.J. White and I have been talking about this for, like, 2 years now. Mike Zimmer's record against the spread and straight up at home is impeccable. I mean, like, this is – it's the best home field advantage in football. When you look at the Packers, at 6-1 – with Aaron Rodgers finally starting to get this offense, the Chiefs on deck with no Patrick Mahomes, more than likely, the Chargers up after that, the trash team, Panthers, then their week 11 bye. They have the Redskins after the bye, the Giants after the bye. I mean, you know, this is a team that's going to get to 10 wins easily. So in my opinion, and barring a total and shocking like collapse via injury related issues, you're probably looking at a situation where in the NFC you have, four playoff spots available, right? Because you're gonna get
if we slide those two in. Well, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I think those. I mean,
yeah,
really three playoff spots available because you have to assume the 6-0 49ers are gonna find a way not to miss the playoffs, right?
Right. Agreed.
And maybe the five. I mean, I mean the 6-1 Saints look.
The Saints are. I mean, look. I mean, I think this. I mean, the Saints are. I'm comfortable saying the Saints are in. So
there's a good.
I would slot three teams in. You know,
all right. Who is
there's going to be? There is going to be a team or two who miss in the NFC, who would wipe up most of the field in the AFC.
Correct. So let's say,
like if a Panthers team, like you could have a really good, solid Panthers team with a top three MVP candidate, like miss on a tiebreaker, and that team would wipe up pretty much anybody in the AFC and maybe the Patriots too, like on their day. Yeah. Like, could they stonewall the Patriots offense and win a grudge match with McCaffrey touching the ball 40 times? Yes.
All right. Well, let's run through this and bear in mind that we could be wrong, but looking at the NFC.
Never. So what was your fight with Prisco though? What was he saying?
I tweeted about Cousins and Jamie Eisenberg, who's the king of all instigators.
Oh God. Yeah.
Copy, like, takes a picture of it. He's like, you should at least tag Pete if you're going to call him out. And he's like, Will changes with the wind. I was like, I picked him to win the Super Bowl. I've been on board the Cousins bandwagon since the beginning of the year. I was like, you're the one bleeping off Russell and Cousins the last 2 weeks. And Pete's like, you think he's good? Look at what Russell did. He sucked. I was like, you're the one changing with the wind, you clown. Like, you're the one who, like, is, like, out there publicly, like, Russell's the MVP. I'm too sorry. I insulted Russell. And he said that – He says a bunch of stuff and then accused me of taking a weekend off because I went down to see my mom on her birthday this weekend. Like F off, clown. Fuck, clown.
I love Pete.
I know, he's the best. So anyway.
He is the best. But look
at the NFC.
Dude, I'm just telling you, that airing of grievances was this year's – you like that moment for Cousins. I think sometimes he needs that to get his edge back and to – you know what I mean? Stop being such a pleaser and stop worrying about ruffling feathers and stop worrying about what the head coach thinks and throw the damn football downfield. Let it loose. And when he does, he can make some plays. Let's see what he can do in December and January. But the Vikings are going to win a lot of games and he's going to put up really good numbers because they've got a lot of pieces there. And they're also running the ball like a mofo.
They are. Dalvin Cook leads the league in rushing, 725 rushing yards. So if we assume that one of the Cowboys or the Eagles is going to win the East and probably not.
I think that's a one. I think you better win that division. That's what I'm saying. I don't think they're getting two.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's a one team division. In the North, Packers and Vikings are both getting in.
Yeah.
In the West, are the 49ers and Seahawks both getting in? Bear in mind, they haven't played each other, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. I think two teams probably get in from that division. I mean, and it could be the Rams. I mean, the Rams could take off. I don't think they will, but they certainly could.
They could be 5-2. If Zerline makes that field goal in Seattle, they're 5-2. The Seahawks are 4-3, and the Rams have the Bengals at home this week. So, yeah, they could. I mean, I'm just saying, like, they're the outlook.
And then real quick, while I'm thinking of it, a memo to anybody in the Seattle front office or coaching staff who might be listening. When you have a really good quarterback, you use him the way Harbaugh uses his quarterback to win the bleeping game. Okay? Like 53-yard field goals in the win. You know what I mean? Like 4th-and-3 around the middle of the field, that's when you let the best player on the field go win that play for you. You don't try a second-rate field goal kicker attempting something probably out of his range on a perfect day on something that is a suboptimal kicking day. Like, come on, man. Like, let Russell Wilson win games for you. He will do it more often than he does not. Like, my God.
I'm with you 100%. What do you think that game, Baltimore beating Seattle in Seattle with Lamar Jackson posting? I know that his numbers aren't great, 9-20. I don't care. I watched the game. If you're talking today, Monday, about his stats and complaining about his stats and pumping up his lack of passing stats for why he didn't have a good game, you're a moron who didn't watch the game.
Right.
What do you think that did for the MVP race in terms of, you know, bringing Russell Wilson back, pushing Lamar Jackson up? I mean,
I don't know, man.
Russell Wilson's a clown.
We're not even halfway in. You know what I mean? Like, there'll be so many more twists and turns. I also think who exactly votes on that one? You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good point.
There's certain people in this business who. I should probably just shut up.
Ironically, it's a dog whistle situation. So maybe this Lamar talk is causing Copper to go nuts.
No, it's just we're getting work done in the house, and there's nowhere I'm running. There's nowhere I can go now, unless I go outside.
You're fine.
But it's loud out there too. But yeah, I mean, look, I just think that certain people are held to standards sometimes that will always prove in the eyes of some to be unattainable.
Mm. Okay.
So I need to see the list of voters. Because not everybody who has the ability to vote on some of these awards knows what the hell they're doing.
I think Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott are on the fringe of that MVP stuff talk too, and that they'll work their way into it if those teams win their division. Aaron Rodgers as well. Who should make a trade? What trades do you see that you
need? I don't think, I mean, Kirk Cousins, I mean, I guess you'd put in the camp of a defender, but like, they tried to win a game without him attempting double-digit passes. Like, I'm not saying I condone that, but like, that was the reality, and they won the game. And then they won, and then the next week he only attempted 13, and they won. If they don't think he's an MVP, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care what numbers he puts up, and when it's only a 16-game sample size, you know what I mean? They basically tried to win despite him. The first month of the season. You know what I mean? A good quarter of the season. Yeah, Unless he literally looks like Aaron Rodgers the rest of the year, every single week, I don't know how we could be saying Kirk Cousins is the MVP.
I mean, if he averages 325 passing yards per game the rest of the season and he completes 76% of
his passes. Right, with three touchdowns and no interceptions. Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like if he plays at a level, I mean, that's not even Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's basically perfect. I mean, since the airing of grievances, I think he's completing like 70-odd percent of his passes. He's got 11 or 12 touchdowns in 3 weeks and one interception, and he's throwing for like 330 yards a game. I mean, yeah, if he keeps that up, which, I mean, Chicago has their number. You know what I mean? Like, that's a bugaboo for them. And you've got that Packers defense again, and yeah, if he does that, then he's the MVP. But literally, like, he would have to do that every single week. I don't think that's feasible.
Probably not, but
to offset the fact that they literally, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff in September happened. Like, I saw it. It was ugly.
Yeah, I'm not going to get that worked up about it. I mean, they curb stomped Atlanta in week one. I get he only attempted 10 passes, but, like, he didn't have to. You know what I mean? Like, they won 28-12. It was laughable, and it wasn't even that close. The at Green Bay and at Chicago games are concerning. I get it. I get it. I mean, that's if he can't go on the road and beat a decent defense or a decent team.
No, the Chicago game was. I mean, that was an atrocity. And the other game they won with him completing 13 passes. I think. I mean,
15. Yeah, against Oakland. I mean, but like, if you're winning by 20 points because your defense is scoring and you're and Dalvin Cook's running wild, like, well, who can't? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. How many league MVPs are apologizing to their number one receiver in week five? I'm sorry.
Look, if there's a tiebreaker,
only so many guys win this award. Like, I don't.
All right, let's talk about two guys who did win the award who are missing time with injury. What I know you reported on this on Sunday. What's the timeline for Patrick Mahomes returning from injury?
Yeah, I'm told it's a 4 to 6 week situation. Does that mean that's what they'll ultimately adhere to? No, because they're continuing, you know what I mean, to get different opinions. And then does something happen in that time frame that pushes it back? We don't know the answer to that. But that's sort of the hope. And how literal is it? You know what I mean? Well, a week is 7 days and they play it on a Thursday. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, you start counting up 28 days or whatever. And so maybe is he back because they're playing on a Sunday or Monday that week and the injury happened on a Thursday. But he's you know, they're going to be without him for a while here. And, I guess the good news is Henny comes off. It looks like he'll be ready to come off IR week 9 when he's eligible. So you've at least got two veteran quarterbacks in the mix instead of, you know what I mean, Pat Shermer's son, you know, like that. The scenario for them this week might just be, you know what I mean, Shermer gets elevated from the practice squad and that's it. I mean, maybe they sign another body, but so getting Henny back will at least give them some volume, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But they don't. This is it. Is what it is. I mean, you know, can this be another Jacoby Brissett, Kyle Allen,
Teddy Bridgewater
situation, or are we looking at what it normally looks like in this league when you lose a top flight starter, which is you're hoping and praying you can tread water and be somewhere around 500 while that guy's out. Not storming to the top of the division.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I don't know. I think this is not going to play out like those other ones. I'm
really?
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, Andy Reid's done this before. Now, the problem for this Chiefs team is that they have the Packers on Sunday night at home. They're underdogs at home against the Packers on Sunday night. And we got screwed because we should have gotten Rodgers, Mahomes. Like with Rodgers coming off that game and Mahomes playing really well. So that stinks. Then you have the Vikings at home. That's a tough matchup. They're going to be underdogs in that game, assuming Patrick Mahomes doesn't play. It's 1 o'clock. Kirk Cousins is going to light up your defense, pal. Then you're at the Titans and at the Chargers. I mean, I would assume that he's not coming back till after the bye. I mean, you have to play this smart. You're 5-1. You're 5-2, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just going to depend on where he is at that stage and what the doctors say. And I don't know that you just do an extra week because it's there. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be a purely medical situation. And once he's cleared to practice, it's because they think he can practice. And then once he's cleared to play, it's because he's cleared to play. I don't know.
They better not screw this up. Don't rush him back.
No, I don't think I don't think it's anything. I'm not insinuating that at all. I'm just saying like the idea that like we'll just do an extra week because it's sitting there. I don't know that that's the reality either. And I don't know that they're going to have that luxury.
Well, they got a pretty good break. And I pointed this out on Twitter and on the podcast yesterday. But, like, the fact that they beat the Broncos after Mahomes got hurt, the Chargers pooped all over, peed down their legs like they do every
week. Yeah.
And the Raiders got blasted by the, by the Packers helps them in a tremendous way. I mean, they're sitting there at 5-2. Two full games, or I guess, a game and a, yeah. They're well clear of the Raiders at 3-3, and the Broncos at 2-5, the Chargers at 2-5.
I don't think, like, the Chiefs pre-Mahomes could have been the one seed. I don't see the Chiefs, but I don't know, man. The Patriots are going to roll up a bunch of wins. Other teams outside their division are going to win games, too. I think their playoff road will be tougher because of this.
100%.
And with that defense being as bad as it is, and I'm not going to go crazy about what they did on Thursday night. Like, I want to see it against a real – like, I want to see it against something other than a 1965 offense. You know what I mean? With a disinterested starting quarterback. Right. Like, I need to see it. Maybe they do rally, and maybe that they've reached their boiling point, and they know that they don't have this guy to bail them out, and they know that it doesn't matter, you know what I mean, if we're down 17 in the fourth quarter because he still might pull it out. So maybe that brings something out in them. And maybe it's somewhat sustainable, especially if they get a little healthier, and maybe if they add a corner or something, but I got to see it.
What about Cam Newton? What are the Panthers going to do? Coming off their bye, they're headed to San Francisco.
Yeah, this one has always been sort of Kyle Allen's game. It's going to take a couple of week process for Cam to get to the medical clearance stage. And then I don't know. I mean, in talking to people there the last couple of weeks, I've given people opportunities to whisper like it's still Cam's job. You know what I mean? No matter what. And that's not what people are whispering. Yeah. So at this point, I'm led to believe that there will be a football decision to be made. And if Kyle Allen keeps performing well against quality opponents, I think he's gonna keep the job.
Wow.
No one has said that to me either, but that's me, you know what I mean? If you're asking me to read the tea leaves and based on my reporting to project out 2 weeks from now, when they do have, you know, when they do sit around and have a personnel meeting, okay, Cam's now 100%, he can do everything, and they start having those conversations. If Kyle Allen continues to be the Kyle Allen we've seen, I think they're gonna stay with him.
There's no way. I agree. First of all, they're not going to play him until he's 100%. They can't. Like, it's not even a decision.
And this is one where 100% probably means 100. Like, you know what I mean? I'm telling you, like, 100% with Mahomes is 100%. 100% here is probably like 125%.
Right, exactly. They're going to be like, Cam, you're not 100%. We can't even have the discussion, buddy. And look, if they go 2-1 these next 3 weeks, it's over. Because they're at 49ers, who are undefeated, Titans at home, and then at Packers. And Packers are obviously a one-loss team that's looked great. If they can manage 2-1 in that stretch, this is Kyle Allen's job. I mean, like, you just couldn't possibly pull it away. If they go 0-3 maybe, or even like, you know, 1-2, and then they have the Falcons and the Saints and the Redskins up after that. I mean, you know, it's a discussion, and like, maybe you pull the ripcord and Cam is kind of ready to come back, but I'm with you. I don't think that, I can't imagine that they'll take the job away from Kyle Allen. That you don't do that to a locker room. It's a disaster. Like you can't take a team, again, assuming 2-1 here in that stretch, you can't take a team that's 6-3 and take the starting quarterback out of the lineup for a guy who might not be.
Well, especially when you look at it, what were they in their last 10 with Cam? Like 1-9 or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's easy. All right.
And I'm not saying all that is on him. I'm not using quarterback wins, but the reality is, they came out of that Thursday night situation, right? And there were people who, not in that organization, but people in that community who felt like the whole thing was about to crumble. You know what I mean? Like that it was, oh, my God, we've won one game in the last, like, 8 months, and we couldn't even beat Tampa at home in a short week, and now Cam's hurt, and the owner might blow up the whole building. You know what I mean? Like, that's where they were. Like, that's the world they were living in. I'm not saying that's what it was. It was nothing like that in their facility, but that's when they came to work that Friday morning. You know what I mean? It was like the everything was on fire.
No, you're
to go from that to this.
100% correct.
You know, to go from that to this, unless this, you know what I mean? Like, if San Francisco goes out and shuts them out, you know what I mean? Like, which could happen. But if this kid continues to look like a highly functional winning quarterback, I don't think they make the change.
I'm with you. All right, next week. Man, it's already the end of October. The season's rolling along. We have the trade deadline coming up Tuesday, October 29th. JLC will join us Monday morning. We'll preview the trade deadline. Maybe there'll be some more deals between then. In the meantime, stay out of trouble. Watch out for vice presidents on trains.
Yeah, I think I'll be. If I run into, well, I'll put it.
No, don't put
Dan
it.
Dan Quayle is on the Amtrak with me. I ain't taking a picture. I'll put it to you that way. There will be no photographic evidence of that. I don't need that one.
The legendary Dan Quayle. What was it that he couldn't spell? Was it potato? All right. Tell Copper we said what's up. We'll talk next Monday, buddy.
All right, buddy. Have a good week. Thank you.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.